creatures of space.
Welcome to Rational Face First Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Barker, along with my brother, Mike.
Hi!
Yeah! So we decided to start a podcast because everyone else is doing it, and we like to follow the crowds. So this
yes.
is...
Yes. We are sheep.
You're sheep. That's what we're going to do. We're going to start a podcast, but hopefully we'll keep it interesting. Mike, do you want to break down the different types of podcasts we'll be doing?
So the podcast is going to have three different parts to it. So first, Paul and I have some friends that have a podcast, but it hasn't been published to iTunes. So we're going to kind of help them out and republish their podcast through us, but it'll be on iTunes, and hopefully it'll help their different causes. excuse me. The second one was the original idea, and that is once a month, one of the perma bloggers from Rational Faiths will be on, and Paul and I will interview them about a recent post they did and kind of about them. That way, those that read our blog have some more familiarity with it. It's kind of – we stole that idea from By Common Consent. They used to do the they used to have a podcast, which was really fun, and have their perma bloggers on it, and I wish they would – start doing it again. It was pretty cool.
Once again, we're not very original. We like to copy things, and so that's more proof in the pudding that that's what we're gonna do. Okay,
we're sheeple, meh. So, and then the third idea, I think is pretty cool. So, kind of taking the idea of what By Common Consent used to do, where they would go one of their podcasts. Episodes that they would do regularly was they would go through the blogger knackle, and different of the perma bloggers would talk about posts they liked in the perma in the blogger knackle. However, what Paul and I are going to do once a week is, because we are great consumers of podcasts, we will do the same thing but with podcasts. So Paul will have like three podcast episodes that he listened to that he really liked. I'll have another three, and we'll chat about them. Because right now there's a for people that are out there, you all know there's a ton load of podcasts, with a lot of them with really good material. And yeah, so that's kind of the general idea. Did I leave anything out, Pablo?
That's it.
Our first podcast that will be published through rationalface.com is a podcast that was done through BYU Radio, and it's an interview with a guest blogger we had where he blogged about infertility within the context of Mormonism. It was our first blog post that really went viral. It went pretty huge, and it was interesting because it was well accepted by the very conservative, more traditional believing Mormons, as well as those Mormons that are more liberal in their politics and their social issues, as well as those of our faith that have left. So I hope you enjoy it. It was really good, and you'll hear what a good podcast should sound like, not the crap that Paul and I will be producing.
And when you say crap, you mean?
Good crap. Like nutty.
Like a cornback rattler kind of crap.
Yeah.
Okay, Michael, you can edit that out, Michael. Take out the cornback rattler.
I don't think you should.
All right, let's leave it in there. Okay. Enjoy the podcast. Talk to you later.
Bye.
I'm Marcus Smith. This is The Morning Show on BYU Radio. You know, this is a show where we have any number of topics that just kind of come in and come out. It's a kind of a revolving door, and sometimes you just hardly even know what you're going to be talking about next. That's a kind of a variety show. It's typical in television and morning television, morning radio. It's a catch-all, and I like it. I like it because of the variety and because you can treat subjects that are serious. You can treat subjects that are humorous. You can just have a romp, or you can sit down for a real heart-to-heart discussion. And so today, we began just an hour ago talking about with somebody who had spent 6 weeks in India working at a leper colony. That leprosy, formally, more scientifically, it's Hansen's disease. But that term leper is still lingering in my mind, and I'll tell you why. It has to do with ostracism, with the social marginalization of people who may not be having the same life experience that they're different. They're different. So we either brand them, If it gets really bad, we ostracize them. If it gets really, really bad, we persecute them. There's a lot of, I'm going to have a little bit of fun with this one too, because some people will feel persecuted when they've been socially snubbed. Let me set the record straight. Persecution is severe. It's when somebody's after your life, when they want to harm you in your body. Persecution, as a metaphor, might have to do with your feelings. Tribulation. I've heard people in church say, oh, this has been a week of many tribulations. Well, take that word, the tribulum. It's a three-pronged spear that can pierce your body. You know, it goes back to the Latin. You got to have, if it has one point on the spear, it ain't tribulation. If it has 2 points on the spear, it still ain't tribulation. You got to have the full contingent of three prongs, and they probably got to poke right through your torso before you say, I'm experiencing tribulation. Okay, I'm having a little bit of fun with it. There's different degrees of ostracism. There's different degrees of treating people prejudicially, which is not to exonerate those of us who in very subtle ways make people feel bad. And sometimes we don't even know we're doing it. That's kind of the topic for this half hour. Let's get into it here a little bit more specifically now. And we're not going to be talking about physical leprosy, but we're going to be talking about a life experience that is so different from most what you might think of as normative life experience. But is it? Okay, here we go. The life is full of cycles and systems with interrelated parts, the water cycle, the energy, water, carbon, nitrogen cycles. Maybe you learned about these kinds of things in school. We human beings would not be around if it were not for a very specific life cycle that involves procreation. Children are born, they come into existence, they grow, they become parents, then they have the next generation of children, and that's how the human race has perpetuated itself. Like it or not, almost all of our biology, human biology, almost all of our anatomy is built around procreation. The race must perpetuate itself. The world must be peopled, as we heard from Benedict in that famed Shakespeare play, talking to, I don't know, Beatrice or somebody else. But the human creature seems to have been designed to perpetuate the race. Even down to, why do you eat a meal? Well, the most immediate reason is so that you will sate your appetite, your hunger. But down the road, it's so that the species will continue. What happens when the cycle is interrupted? What happens when procreation doesn't happen? Does the race die off? Or what happens in the small sphere of life experience? What happens to a couple when they experience infertility? It's an old, old issue. Go back to biblical times. Think about the stories of Hannah, Elizabeth, Abraham's Sarah in her old age conceiving a child and not being able to for the bulk of her life, right? In olden times, we called this barrenness, right? And in ancient times, there was a stigma associated with it. Is there a stigma still today? And if so, in which context, in which cultures, in which societies is infertility a stigma? Did you think we were going to be talking about this on the morning show? I wasn't expecting it, but we have a guest today. I've debated he has authored a piece of writing about this topic, which is very compelling. And I will let him talk. I promise you, I will let him talk in just a moment. I'm going to introduce him without his name. I toyed with the idea of calling him Winston or Cedric, but I think we'll just say our guest. Our guest today, great to have you with us. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You authored an essay, and it was in a popular blog called Rational Faiths. And the title was, So When You're Going to Have Kids. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to write this piece?
Well, this is a very, important and sensitive topic. And it's an experience that my wife and I went through several years ago. And it's taken us really this long before we felt like, well, before I felt like I wanted to share the story. And I felt like there was some benefit to sharing the story. I wrote it anonymously. I wasn't seeking after attention. Even being here, I'm not, you know, there's nothing, it's, you know, I preferred anonymity to be able to just share the true raw emotions of what it was like to experience infertility and the disappointment associated with it.
And the reaction of people around you.
Yeah, the reaction of people around me. Because I wanted to just give some light, I guess, so if you're asking me what motivated me to write the blog, I mean, I wanted to give light, I guess, to this somewhat quiet anguish that happens with couples. You do hear a lot about infertility, but I think, I don't know if it's recognized, I guess, as sensitively, and especially I know that it's not discussed hardly at all from the male's perspective. And in fact, when I was, so it started with me. I was diagnosed with infertility. I mean, I was told to be, I was sterile, according to the doctors, according to several doctors. I was sterile, 100%. And at that moment, I could not recall a single person that I'd heard of, a single male that I knew that was sterile.
You thought you were the only one.
Well, I felt like I was the only one. I mean, I knew statistically I wouldn't be, or the, you know, and the doctors are telling me like, oh no, this just happens. And, oh, you know, testicular failure and all these different things that you as a guy, you know, you never ever want to hear in your lifetime, right? But I mean, I certainly felt like I was all alone. I didn't know who to talk to. I didn't know, you know, I mean, as far as I was concerned, it could have been leprosy. It's something I'm reading about it in a textbook. You know what I mean? It felt very distant and out there for me. So I thought I should shed some light on something like this.
We're going to get into a little bit more detail of your story, okay, about how things progressed through your life to where you are today, okay, from what your expectations were as you went into marriage, what your hopes and dreams were, and then what you actually learned. Because there were multiple stages. I mean, the story isn't just, mm-hmm, you were told by a doctor that you were suffering from infertility. Before we do that, however, I want to make some kind of delicate comment of the social context in which you live. You know, okay, here we are. We're coming from BYU, mm-hmm, BYU Radio, from a predominantly Latter-day Saint or Mormon community. Mm-hmm. Our listeners are not necessarily Latter-day Saints, and they may not know what it's like to grow up as a Mormon. Mm-hmm. But if you do grow up as a Mormon, and this was my experience, you hear routine, regular messages about when you are a father, when, mm-hmm, you are a mother, when you become parents. There is encouragement to have families. And historically, there have been seasons in the history of Mormondom when people have been encouraged to have large families.
Right.
So much so that within the culture, not from the doctrine and not from the theology, but within the culture, mm-hmm, of Mormon living, it's almost a badge of honor to have sired, mm-hmm, many offspring, right? You know? And so I just want to make it clear, even though we might not be talking to Mormons right now, that family life and parenthood are hugely important,
oh, yeah,
within the Mormon culture.
Right.
So now, tell your story within that context.
Oh, okay. So when I first wrote the blog, I established some context that, you know, hey, I grew up in this culture. And honestly, I thought the blog would stay local. I wrote it with a local audience in mind. Had I known that it would go as viral as possible, I probably would have left some of these parts out or at least given more explanation, because when I opened the blog, it was like, you know, I'm giving a little nod to the culture and kind of a wink, you know, to those who have been through the culture with me. But yeah, in this particular culture, I come from a family that's LDS. There's 9 kids in my family. Okay, so yeah, a big family, right? My wife, they've got 5 kids in her family. And my whole life, I thought I'd grow up, graduate from high school, serve an LDS mission, come home, within 2 years get married, go to college, graduate from college, et cetera. And so that was just the kind of the cultural norm. If you were to say like, okay, what's the expectation? And again, not doctrinal, that's not taught from the pulpit, just culturally or socially, that's kind of a normal.
Let's blame Shakespeare. The world must be peopled, okay?
Okay, there you go. So according to Shakespeare, I was supposed to get married soon and start having kids. Of course, their lifespan was a lot shorter back then, so I was supposed to get married much earlier, right? So anyway, I'm in Utah Valley, where the average marrying age is probably younger than the rest of the country, certainly younger than maybe Wall Street or, you know, some of these other, Washington, D.C. And so I'm 28, 29, 30, 31, finally get married. So already I'm starting the process, and I kind of give a little tongue-in-cheek, but just for explanation purposes, I start the process a little bit late. We're getting married, and we're having a ball. Love my wife. She's my absolute best friend. Love her more and more each year. Been married now 7 going on 8 years. And I'm the last person out of 9 kids to get married. Well, I'm also the last person to have kids. And in fact, I have nieces and nephews having kids by this point. So,
great uncle.
Yeah.
Great uncle Cedric.
Coolest uncle Cedric. And so the... let's see. I can't remember where I was going with that. So yeah, the pattern.
We got you married at 31.
Yeah. Married at 31.
And even though this was somewhat delayed according to the social contextual norms within mm-hmm. Mormon culture, 31 was pretty late for a guy to be getting married. Mm-hmm. I married at 38, so I know what you're talking about.
Very cool.
Look at that. Did you hear what he said? Very cool.
Hey, man. So, I wish you guys could see me. I'm about to give him a fist bump.
Is that what they call that thing? Okay, I'm too old to even know that. Okay, fist bump it is. So here you are. You're off the beaten path. You're not.
Uh-huh.
And now you get married. And then and you've been married 7 years. But what happens? When do you start thinking about children?
Well, for me personally, it happened later than for my wife, which is point number one. I don't think people should ever ask when you're going to have kids, period, because it's a very, very personal question. But my wife was ready to start trying after we'd been married for 6 months, okay? And that the logic was, hey, let's get started. We know we're going to have kids. We know we got married a little older than typical, and we want to have 3-4 kids. Let's just start. And at that point in time, we thought it was, as soon as you start trying, you start having. Right? Because that's what almost everyone around us, I say almost, right? But at that point, your reality is, well, we'll have kids as soon as we start trying. Oh, a year goes by and I finally get ready. So the first point I make is don't ask, because it could literally be the couple's, you know, that one argument that keeps happening over and over and over. And every couple's got one. So it's like, don't ask the question, when are you going to have kids? If maybe the husband's dragging his feet and the wife isn't dragging her feet, that could be some resentment there. So it's just you're messing with a possible Pandora's box. So I don't know if I'm supposed to be on a soapbox on this show or not. But I would make a recommendation that if you're going to ask when are you going to have them, that in that question, the context and just the nature of the question itself implies a whole lot of planning and a whole lot of biology and a whole lot of very none of your business that goes into having kids. And it's just best probably not to ask that. You can ask, do you have children? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just, you know, asking about the person. But
Well, there seems to be kind of this presupposed judgment in the question itself. When are you going to... kind of presupposes that there's an obligation,
yeah.
And there is a social sort of obligation to move forward. But whether it's for physiological reasons of the inability, or perhaps the time for you as a couple is, yes, it's your private, intimate decision as parents. It's also, from the Mormon perspective, it's a sacred obligation. And it's when you have sort of either idiosyncratic or private sacred responsibilities, why go down that road and start mm-hmm. prying into it? That's
yeah.
kind of, you know, how often do you pray? Can right. I ask you that?
Yeah, how much money is in your bank account right now? Like, how much credit card debt do you have? You know what I mean? It's like there's so many personal questions that you could ask that the person would never in a million years ask if they realized it was personal as it is. But let me present a third scenario. Yes, most couples want to have kids. There are a lot of couples that just don't want to. You know, maybe there was a rough childhood or some abuse or something like that, and they just flat out don't want to bring a child into this world. They know the world's messed up enough, and they just, for one decision or another, they just decided, I'm not going to have kids. If you ask them, if you go into that question, just like you said, there's some it's laden with, it's laden with that judgment and kind of the right and wrong. There's a right way to answer and a wrong way almost built into the question. When are you going to have kids says that they are definitely going to. It's just a matter of when. And if they say, we're not going to have kids, then all of a sudden, backpedaling. And it just doesn't, it's just a none of your business kind
of
question.
Did you get that question then?
A ton?
A ton.
I got it 1 month after we were married in the grocery store.
Do you remember which generation of people in society were more likely to ask that question? Were these people 50 plus? Were they your peers of your same age bracket? Or were they people younger than you who would ask this question?
All over
the map?
all over. The first person to ask me was probably 50 years old in the supermarket, in the produce aisle. Yeah. And he's a friend of mine, and he kind of asked it jokingly. He was at my wedding reception. I mean, I knew he didn't want to pry. My answer was, hopefully 9 months from this morning, you know, wink, wink, to kind of show, hey, that's, you know.
But that was kind of deflecting
totally,
the question.
Totally.
You did that
our
kind
family,
of deftly, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Our family asked all the time because we were, again, we were the last ones. It was totally innocent. It wasn't a prying question from a family's perspective.
Nobody wanted to hurt your feelings.
A lot in church. No, not at all.
The issue in the question became more of a barb. You got the two prongs now, not the three of the tribulation.
Sure.
But it becomes more of a barb for you once you know that you're infertile, right?
Once you know you're infertile, I compare it to having a sunburn and a bad sunburn and somebody slaps you on the back. They don't realize they're hurting you. They're just showing affection, but it stings, you know? So, and I don't just mean that question. I mean somebody getting up and saying they're so glad that God's entrusted them with children. That means something different when you're sitting in the audience wondering why God hasn't entrusted you with children, you know?
But how can you ask people not to say that? If people are just, they're innocently and joyfully wanting to express their life experience, you can't put a gag order on people and say, don't talk about loving your children and having children and
and
disciplining your
children. I would never dream of asking. And now I have children. I can't keep myself from expressing my joy about my children every day. I mean, I love my children. Absolutely love them, adore them. There probably are statements I won't make around those who don't have children, whether I know they're struggling with infertility or not. There are definitely things I won't say. Things like, and this was said in front of us, this was said in front of other couples that are struggling to have kids, things like, well, unless you've actually had a child of your own, you'll never truly understand what it's like to be loved by a child. You know, something like that. Totally non-intentional. Non-intentional to be offensive, but to the woman who never can have kids of her own, to listen to that,
is there a way to convey that kind of a feeling that somebody might have? I mean, the person who said that, is there a way to convey their joy in parenthood without the barb? Because I'm wondering what was really meant by that. Was that meant to say, you know, you're an outsider, and I know something you don't know, and it's because I have children?
No, I don't even think that was meant to be said. I just think she was getting some social currency off of expressing her love that she has for her children. I don't even think she probably just didn't realize. I mean, I don't think she knew really what she was saying with the audience. There was an audience of about eight people, all of them except for the one, and then us. There's one other couple without children that couldn't, right? And they ended up adopting. And the wife of the couple had been very interactive in the conversation, and we just noticed body language and everything. The woman who said this would never hurt a fly. She would never in a million years say something like that, right? But it's like, it's a complex issue because it's kind of like you're in the same group as somebody who just realized that they are paralyzed, but you can't tell that they're paralyzed because they're sitting in a chair, and you're sitting there talking about how much fun it is to train for this race, and that person loves to run or was training for the same race, right? And you have no idea that they're paralyzed. If you knew they were paralyzed and that they really missed running and they wanted to run that race, you would talk about that race completely differently. You just would. Because you wouldn't say, like, man, don't you miss running? Like, don't you? Oh, I bet you feel bad that you can't run for this race. You would never in a million years say that because you knew that they just heard the most devastating news and you'd be more sensitive to it. I think everybody would. And so that's why I say it's a complex issue because usually it's hidden. Usually they're not talking about it. Usually they're not flying a flag that says, hey, I'm infertile. Don't talk about, you know. And I don't think you should ever stop talking about the joy that your children bring, because I think children need to hear that over and over, and they need to hear you talking to your other friends about it, and they need to hear that you're bragging to your coworkers about them and all that stuff. And I think children need to hear over and over and over and over and over that they are loved, that they are appreciated, and that you feel fortunate to have them in your life. So I'm not advocating that you stop at all. And that was one of the comments on the blog post, and I said, holy, if that's the message you got, let me backtrack here. I don't advocate that at all. What I do advocate is just express some sensitivity when asking these kinds of questions. Don't ask the really invasive or personal questions. And also, if I can just shed some light on infertility, so that maybe when you're giving a talk in church or if you're preaching a sermon to your congregation or whatever denomination you're in, or a family planning class at a college or whatever, just understand that there's a percentage in the audience that cannot have children, and maybe tailor your message accordingly.
Here we are visiting with Marmaduke. You just became Marmaduke. No, you're Liam. Your name is now Liam.
Liam. Because I love my children. They can't be taken.
How can this problem ever be solved? Because suppose I want to talk about the resurrection on Easter Sunday, and somebody just lost their spouse the previous week. Do I have to jettison all of my remarks in church and not talk about the glory of the resurrection, that life is wonderful? Or what if I want to get up and express my immense gratitude that in a horrific car wreck, my child was not killed but was only slightly injured? But perhaps there's somebody unbeknownst to me that's in that room of 500 people, mm-hmm. and that person in that room just had also a car wreck where, you know, or a hit and run, and they lost their loved one. Is this really not going to subvert? I'm being devil's advocate here, okay. Liam. does this not just fully subvert the potential for people to be meaningful and authentic and sincere about their own real life experiences?
In my opinion, I think the more real you are, the more unfiltered you are, then the more meaningful the content's going to be, because people don't want to hear platitudes. People are done with platitudes and, you know, the same phraseology used over and over and over and over, right?
Maybe it comes down to, I'm putting words in your mouth now, but maybe it comes down to the real, the genuine matters. But as soon as it rounds the bend into here's a cookie cutter for everyone, mm-hmm. that's the problem.
Yeah, I think it's where you leave the one and stay with the 99, to quote the biblical phrase, right? It's not leave the one and go to the 99. It's leave the 99 and go to the one, right? So if we try to genericize the message and say, this is applicable to the 99, the one's going to feel ostracized. Right? The one's going to feel left alone because he is, or she, because the message hasn't been. So I think that it's important to say, I want everyone to feel loved in this talk. I want everyone to feel loved and to be a little bit cognizant of the fact. Now, it doesn't mean you have to address every single situation, but I think it could be addressed by simply saying, now, I don't know what all of your situations are. I don't know what you're struggling with.
Acknowledge the exceptions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Acknowledge them.
I think more messages could be said that acknowledge, hey, there's a lot of exceptions in here. I want you all to feel loved. I want you all to feel recognized. There's divorcees. There's single parents. There's, there's people that may never get married during this lifetime. Let's make sure that everybody, when we're talking about parenthood, regardless of denomination, regardless of social context, when we're talking about parenthood, we're talking about
I'll tell you one. Here's one. Did you think this is silly? When we're talking about basketball, because I don't like basketball. Mm-hmm. But the sports, you know, I can't tell you how many times I'm sitting in church and everybody just assumes that I'm going to get the sports metaphor. I don't.
Sure.
I'm saying this because we're going into a sports segment in just a bit here.
Okay,
I just want to do a little bit of a setup here.
Yeah.
We've got to put a bow on the end of this story, which is you did mention that you now have children.
Uh-huh.
And so in 90 seconds, how did your story end? Because there was a season of your life with infertility, but now you have children.
Yeah. For a couple of years, I thought I was completely 100% infertile. It was due to a medication that was shutting off the production of sperm from my pituitary called Androgel. It's an artificial testosterone. Four or five, six doctors didn't want to look at the side effects of that. It's a prominent side effect. When I went to see an andrologist that focuses on male fertility, that was the first thing he took me off and then put me on some other medications to kind of balance out those hormones. Once I started producing, about 2 weeks before I found out I was producing, my wife had emergency surgery, and we found out she had endometriosis, which was destroying all of her reproductive stuff. So there was a 2-week period where we thought both I was infertile and she was infertile, and that was hell. I mean, that was just, that was then when both doors slammed shut. Turned out, though, she got cleaned up by the surgery, and I started producing naturally. We got pregnant the very first window, and so our story does have a happy ending. And it's different than a lot of other people's happy endings. A happy ending could come through adoption, foster children, whatever. But our story does have that ending where we've got two beautiful children right now. They're 2.5 and 9 months old, and we love them to death. I mean, just if they're listening.
And you stopped short of saying only those like me who have their own biological children can know the joy I feel. You didn't say that.
Nope, didn't say that at all.
You didn't say that. That was sensitive of you.
Well, thank you.
Hey.
Thank you.
This is a great topic, and you were very articulate in treating it. I just want to thank you for coming.
Thank you for having
me. Great to have you. Our guest, the author of a blog post titled, So When You Gonna Have Kids?, which appeared in the popular blog Rational Faiths. And we're leaving him anonymous because of his choice, and I think it worked really well. And so see you around.
Okay, thanks.
This is The Morning Show. I'm Marcus Smith. We've got, as I mentioned, sports on the way.